As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Let's get to Russ Kostrick right now, the portfolio manager for the BlackRock Global Allocation Fund. Russ, I'm trying to work out when Rick and Bob get on the phone. Some Monday morning, the call goes around and they say, back up the truck, let's buy these bonds. Russ, are we close to that moment yet?
Oh, good morning, Jonathan. Look, I think actually you're probably closer to buying bonds than stocks, if that's any consolation. You know, we've had this enormous move. And, you know, one of the things we're talking about nominal yields all the time. Let's talk about real yields for a moment. You look at the 10-year. As recently as March, the 10-year real yield based on the TIPS market was negative 1%. Check this morning, you're about 130, 140. That's the highest since 2011. Now, granted, we've got a very different inflation environment back then, but what is interesting is that for the first time in years, you can actually build some carry, some yield in the portfolio with bonds, particularly with the short end of the curve. So, look, this is a hard market. Bonds are not acting as a hedge, but you are starting to get to levels where the income is becoming a little bit more interesting.
So we're going to hear from a whole host of Fed speakers today, Russ. Do you expect them to push back on some of the hawkish rhetoric and some of the response in markets because of the strong dollar and because of what that does internationally?
I'm not sure. You know, the reality is the Fed was pretty resolute in the last few communications. I think there was no doubt left in anyone's mind after last week, after Jackson Hole. And again, we know what the Fed is looking at. They're looking at the labor market. They're looking at end user demand. And while we have seen some softening and some deceleration of realized inflation, it's just not obvious, given, you know, how intense they're being about this, that there are enough signals, enough all clear signals, that they're going to give the market a break in the near term. I completely agree. The dollar's a challenge. In addition to this surge in real rates, we're seeing the dollar adding to the tightening financial conditions. And if you want to know why risky assets are down as much as they are, you know, you don't have to look much further than the Fed and this very rapid shift in financial conditions.
Russ, what's the trigger where you go all in? Where you basically said we're close to buying bonds, closer to buying bonds. What's the trigger to let's go?
Well, I guess the thing is there never is that trigger. You know, I mean, this is about a continuous change rather than a discrete. So we were much more underweight bonds a year ago than we are today. We're still underweight bonds relative to our benchmark. We've closed a lot of that gap. In terms of, you know, what are some of the milestones? In terms of the short end, I think you're already getting a pretty good yield. If you think about the long end, you know, one thing to consider, typically long end yields have peaked just about where the terminal Fed funds rate is. We know from last week, the terminal Fed funds rate, we're probably not there yet, but certainly as we get to 4% or over that, as we get closer, then maybe think about closing some more of that underweight, closing some more of that gap.
A bit of a mea culpa from Chris Harvey and the team over at Wells Fargo, just publishing just moments ago. Here's the quote for our audience. Our belief that we would not retest the 22 low until the first half of 23 was wrong. Despite retesting the lows, we feel the market bottom has not been established and stocks will make newer lows, lower lows in 2023 as EPS estimates come down and the Fed tightens into recession. Russ, that's the next leg for a lot of people, the next shoe to drop. Do you think we've seen enough of that? Earnings expectations come in?
Probably not. If you look at where earnings estimates are for next year, you're still getting, you know, modest growth. Is that consistent with a slowdown in the economy? You know, look, I have some sympathy for the notion that the next leg for equities is probably more about earnings estimates and about revisions than it's about the multiple. The multiple's already come down a lot. Now, granted, if inflation stays sticky, there's room for more multiple compression, but I would be more worried about the earnings side. One of the things we are doing in the portfolio, we're very underweight equities. But in the equities we do have, we're emphasizing earnings consistency, margin consistency, profitability, because these are the characteristics they think are going to be challenged in 23 with the economy slowing.
Hey, Russ, thank you, sir. Got to kick off the week with you. Russ Kostrick, yes, there of BlackRock.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Joining us, Calum Pickering, senior economist at Berenberg Bank. What is it like to be paid in sterling and to enjoy a cup of coffee in Manhattan morning?
I'm paying even more for bad coffee. It's great.
Let's get to it. Your insight here on Trussonomics. I saw Martin Wolf. I saw The Economist, the great work at Bloomberg. Your immediate insight on this experiment of the prime minister.
I think if the government had more credibility, markets would be more sanguine about it. We have a government here that lacks economic policy credibility since the Brexit vote. Markets don't like Brexit. They've been very nervous over the last few years about what's going on the Northern Irish border. And it means actually the detail at the moment isn't what is driving these markets. It's just the view that the UK is going to borrow more. If I really lean back though, I find it hard to label this a panic. If I look at the moves in interest rate expectations, if I look at the moves in inflation expectations, what I see is that captures all of the move in gilts. So we don't have an outsized move here, which means me, you know, does the Bank of England intervene? If you can't see this as a genuine panic, I don't think they do. I think they stand back and see how markets play out.
They stand by and see how the politics plays out as well. Do they risk their, and let's remember, this is a young experiment.
That's right.
Do they risk their independence?
No, I think the Bank of England doesn't risk its independence. It reacts just to the inflation risks. The problem with Trussonomics is we only have, let's say, two parts of 3 parts so far. We have the tax cuts. They're substantial, but if you look at the detail, actually they don't go as far as the headlines might suggest. Not hiking corporation taxes is not going to be stimulating demand much. The regulatory stuff looks good, but markets just prefer good old-fashioned Keynesian demand side shifts in economic policy. Supply side policy is complicated. It will take time. The third element is what happens with government spending. I would not be surprised if the government actually sees this reaction and says, we need to come out with something soon to shore up confidence that we're not going to be borrowing excessively. So expect, I think, some policies to cut government spending, to downsize both sides of the state, the tax side and the spending side.
Oh, Callum, from what you're saying then, you think the government blinks before this Bank of England does?
I think that would make much more sense. I think if the Bank of England steps in here aggressively and hikes rates against this huge supply side shock. Remember, the context of all of this is that markets are incredibly worried that the West is basically heading into a recession. I think we're already in a recession in the UK and Europe. US is probably going to trail a little. And then the Bank of England and the UK Treasury are, well, A, the Bank of England is behind the curve. B, the Treasury is about to borrow all this cash to cut taxes. This is an experiment. The UK is now sticking its neck out. The Bank of England doesn't want to double down on the recession pressure by hiking interest rates in order to get these inflation expectations down. It would be better, actually, if the government came out and said, well, actually, if you look at our tax cuts, they're spread over the next few months, and we're going to cut government spending too. So I think it's the borrowing side that markets are afraid of. It's not necessarily the fact that the Bank of England is going to have to help the government bring down inflation. It's a complicated issue. Unpicking this is not easy.
Callum, with a lot of people, I think they're uncomfortable with consensus, particularly over the last couple of years. And overwhelmingly, the consensus is this is the wrong thing to do. Is there a small part of you that thinks that perhaps this risk might be a risk worth taking?
Well, I'm actually, as it goes, a bit more sanguine about all of this. I think the tax cuts, by and large, make sense. I think the regulatory policy, by and large, makes sense. There's some weird stuff in there. I don't think we should have a growth target in the UK. 2.5% is just going to be virtually impossible to hit while you've got Brexit uncertainty hanging over the economy. But again, I think it just comes down to a view that the UK lacks credibility in markets now since the Brexit vote, since the Bank of England let inflation get so high. And so to be non-consensus in your economic policy is just asking for a negative reaction. I think, again, if we had a more credible government, markets would look more carefully at this and see, actually, cutting taxes into a recession for an economy that can largely follow the take the additional borrowing with some decent deregulation policy may actually lift trend growth over the next few years. That should be taken positively. It's just markets aren't thinking clearly at the moment. They're not pricing on fundamentals. And the UK has basically asked for a negative reaction with this policy, and it's got it.
Callum, John recently requested that we have a meteorologist on a regular basis to give us a sense of what this winter looks like, and perhaps that would be more accurate than a lot of prognostications. How much does the UK budget make sense with a warm winter?
Good question. The real policy to focus on is the energy price cap. If that was the only thing that the UK had announced, I think the markets would be fairly happy with the fiscal move. Essentially, what the government has said is, your energy prices aren't going to go up for the next 2 years further than they already have. That's probably a sensible policy. We could be looking at eye-watering energy bills if you didn't cap energy prices somehow. I think it's probably a bit too broad-based. You could have just focused on the households that really needed it. But that policy will basically cut at least 3 percentage points off peak inflation. We'll probably get to about 10.5 and top out. And it will probably mean that inflation rolls over with confidence next year once these energy price base effects. We're not going to be worried about a renewed spike this time next year. That's a fairly good policy. And essentially, it would be an act of God where energy prices would be if you didn't introduce that policy. And so it makes sense, warm winter or cold winter, this is probably the right thing to do.
Okay, but on the flip side, there's a concern that if you don't dampen demand, you're just going to have the same problem all over again. And you're going to create a spiral of spending, just basically that's fueling the pickup in demand that offsets the whole point of the program. What would you like to see from that demand-driven type of policy that could potentially bring this more into balance?
Demand is certainly a part of it in the UK, no doubt. This is not continental Europe where virtually all of the inflation can be explained by supply. But what you don't have is a US-style situation where demand is racing well ahead of its pre-COVID trend. What you have is a supply problem and robust demand in the UK. So the question is, what would inflation be if you didn't have this supply problem? Inflation expectations before this recent fiscal intervention might provide a good guide. You'd be looking at about 2.5, 2.6% on a 5-year break even. That's high inflation, but it's not incredible inflation. It probably justifies the bank raising interest rates a little north of 3%. So that's the thing to focus on here.
My study is that current account balances matter in this, and it's something the media doesn't talk about a lot. We love to talk about sterling to 4 decimal points and that. I've got up the United Kingdom current account balance, folks, as a percent of GDP. Crisis, 1974, 1989, 2016, and they're all pointing stochastic. It gets fixed. Are we close to where it gets fixed?
No, I don't think so. The UK is not borrowing in a foreign currency. It's mainly borrowing in sterling. John made a great point earlier. If you actually look at structural demand for UK gilts, most of it's domestic. About 30% is international. And most of that is covered by a decent investment position in the UK. What you have here is the UK importing much more energy with a weaker currency. If you look through this recession, sterling is likely to be stronger, energy prices will be lower. So I don't see a structural current account problem that would normally drive a currency crisis.
Interesting.
Callum, thank you. As always, enjoy the bad coffee.
Just brilliant.
Here in New York. That's what the Brits are good at, Tom. Banter. See that comeback from Callum there? Just fantastic.
Callum Pickering. On foreign exchange now, Jordan Rochester. I'm going to get one question in here on the globe. John, I know, wants to focus on sterling. He is with Nomura. Jordan, I'm looking at the intervention experiment of the Japanese. They've made back on a Fibonacci retracement about 70% of the intervention value. What happens to yen? What happens to those institutions when the yen weakens back to where it was before they intervened?
It puts the pressure on the politicians, Tom, to do something about rates rather than focusing on the FX intervention. The main problem is for Japan, they are one of the few central banks to still have low interest rates and to be conducting quantitative easing purchases. Until they stop those quantitative purchases, this yen intervention is unlikely to have a material impact on moving the yen to a stronger place. What it has done is taken the steam out of the long dollar yen trade. It does make us question, you know, what's the upside in being long dollar yen when you're fighting a central bank with one of the largest FX reserves in the world? But at the moment, the first order was the Japanese most likely use their cash balances. So right. It had very little impact on the US rates market. But if it carries on, it will probably lead to higher US yields, which will make this FX intervention even more difficult to lead to a stronger yen.
And John, that's how everyone's different, as you mentioned earlier, where Japan has ample cash, maybe the United Kingdom does not.
Well, the other issue as well, Tom, with Japan, it's a very domestic bond market, and Jordan can speak to this much better than I can. So a lot of that is priced in yen, the debt, Tom, a lot of it is held at home. The thing I'd say about the UK, and this is an important difference too, is that yes, a lot of it might be held abroad, 30% of the gilt market held abroad, but Jordan, a lot of it is sterling denominated anyway, so they don't have that foreign currency problem. So Jordan, I think the issue we're all trying to grapple with in the UK right now, is this just a normal required adjustment needed to attract capital to finance a big fiscal package through a weaker currency and higher yields? Or is it something bigger than that, something worse? Do we have the ingredients required to have that self-fulfilling downward spiral?
I think it's something worse, unfortunately. I don't want it to be worse. This is the country I earn my money in. I'm long sterling, naturally, from my salary. But we just put out a piece just before this. I came on live on air. We've now revised lower our sterling view. We were looking for 106 by year end. As you know, we've gone through that rapidly, quicker than I expected as well. So now we've adjusted our view. It seems like the market is focusing more on the terms of trade deficit that the UK has when it comes to the current account. But there's a terms of trade story with high energy prices and UK imports skyrocketing. So now we're looking for 97.50 in cable by year end. So that is unfortunately below parity. And I've been kind of toying whether to make that call sooner. And the reason I didn't was I thought markets would be concerned about the Bank of England raising rates and that would support the sterling. But now we've switched to an emerging market style crisis where it's become very clear that even with rising interest rates in the UK, it's becoming less attractive to investors as this crisis goes on. And therefore, I think we break through parity in cable before Christmas, probably by the end of November, and we get down to 95. So the end of March next year, that's if nothing is done about this supply side crisis in Europe and if we have high energy prices continue. I could be wrong though.
Yeah.
I could be wrong if three things happen. The first one is if we have the Bank of England raise rates. Now we're expecting them to step in with some sort of warning in the market. Ed Conway from Sky was suggesting that might happen today. If they don't raise rates, there's about 80 basis points priced this week. So if they don't raise rates this week, sterling will probably take another hit. But the main thing is on the government side. It's not really the Bank of England that's being challenged here. It's because we're not having a fiscal policy with fiscal rules tethering market expectations to a sort of sustainable fiscal spend. And because of the government doubling down over the weekend saying there's more tax cuts to come, it's why we expect more of these sort of moves to come too.
Well, so Jordan, let's pick up on some of those points. Traders now pricing in up to 200 basis points of rate hikes by the Bank of England by November. There is a question, what do yields have to do to get to that 97.50 level without complete capital flight by foreign investors, which is the fear that a lot of people have? We're looking right now at five-year yields on gilt. Going vertical, basically at 4.6% right now, up half a percentage point every day, it seems like. Where do we stop here, given your outlook?
Well, we're looking for a terminal rate in the UK around 4.5%. The market's doing pretty well, getting close to pricing that. That's below by about 100 basis points where we think the Federal Reserve will get to, so 5.5 for their terminal rate in this cycle. We've just literally revised up that Bank of England call. We were looking for 50 basis points at the next two meetings. We're now looking for that to be in clips of 75. So it's quite clear the Bank of England do need to step up. Now, what will stop the problem is not the Bank of England. So the reason I mention this is because with an emerging market, there are two ways to stop a currency crisis from getting bad to worse. The first one is aggressive rate hikes to kind of stamp out speculative trading and also to make the risk return on assets more attractive for foreign investors. But the main thing boils down to the where the problem is in the first place. The fiscal side. So usually in the EM space, you'd say, let's have some fiscal austerity, please, guys. Reverse those tax cuts. Yeah. And that will shore up the confidence of investors. We're not getting that in the UK right now.
Jordan, as you said, there is some talk about the potential for a Bank of England news conference in the near future. What can they say? What would they potentially do in such a statement?
Well, they need to talk about financial stability, price stability, foreign exchange stability. If the market gets into a framework where the Bank of England is reacting to FX moves, any move we have then met with a rate hike, then perhaps it stems the fall in the currency, the pace of the fall. But the main point from me is that the pace will probably slow down. We're quite used to having flash crashes in sterling, unfortunately, since Brexit. So it's not the first time I've woken up seeing on my phone the pound's tumbled 4 to 5%. Usually this leads to a sort of mean reversion, the pound recovers. But as I said, this time round, it's a fundamental regime change that's taking place in the UK. In 2016 to 2019, the market was trying to price in what Brexit could look like. Now we know what it looks like, and we've got this energy crisis pushing the trade deficit and the current account deficit to historical wides, 8% current account deficit of GDP. This is the definition of a country that should be experiencing these moves in the FX market. So until that changes, until energy markets, if we see prices collapse even further, then maybe I can change my tune. But on the Bank of England side, if they do 100 basis points, let's say this week, and if they signal that they're ready to do more, so give the idea of another intermeeting rate hike, that could help slow the pace of the move. But the point for me is it won't stop it.
Well, Jordan, if they did that, they're responding to the move in the market or they're responding to fiscal policy. And what on earth does that look like going into the weekend and the Conservative Party conference?
Indeed. The idea of the statement from the Chancellor was that he has been speaking to the Bank of England, I think, twice a week was what he said. So it would be quite embarrassing for the Bank of England because we assume that they have been given a heads up as to what was in the fiscal package but when they made their decision last week. And like I said, this is a market reaction function to the fiscal side. If we look at last week, we had the Bank of England we had a hawkish 50 basis points. We had some members voting for 75. And the market took it pretty well in terms of FX, at least. I know gilts moved quite a bit. But in the FX space, the pound held its ground, waiting for that budget. But it kind of boils down to a point that my colleague Andy Chater is making. What we learned from the budget last week is fiscal rules are out the window until December, when we get an idea of what they will be in December. And that uncertainty has made the fiscal side more untethered. And that's what markets hate the most. It's that uncertainty as to what the UK will look like in a few months' time.
Jordan, good to hear from you. Jordan Rochester there of Nomura.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let's get to an important conversation with Stephen Whiting, Chief Investment Strategist, Chief Economist at Citi Global Wealth Investments, with terrific experience, and I've said many times, parsing corporate profits, corporate America, into what we expect to see in our economy. Stephen Whiting, how have you adjusted to the new rates of change in foreign exchange and bonds and the real interest rate? How have you adjusted in the last 10 days?
Well, you're either in a defensive position or you're looking at a lot of immediate payment portfolios that you can't turn the clock back on. You know, we have been adding U.S. Treasuries, not because the yield is some incredibly high, beautiful inflation-adjusted level, but it's a defensive asset that's probably going to work for a period when the economy turns. And unfortunately, we are heading for a turning point in the American economy. And I think we'll do that quite well below the rates that the Fed is signaling for 2023.
90 days ago, we were angsting about corporate earnings, and I think they did better than good. Someone out there has October 14 as a launch date here. We're a little bit of ways from there, but let's go to your expertise there. Are we going to be shocked again at a resilient corporate America?
Well, we probably shouldn't be. The look back at the third quarter is still going to be a period of rising production, rising inventories. That's a problem for next year's profits, not for this year's profits. What's happened in financial markets and financial profits is telling us where we are headed for the coming year. We would expect about a 10% decline in U.S. EPS next year, again, at a level well short of the Fed funds rate that they are guiding us to, again, to try to maximize the impact, to sort of pull all hope away from the notion that they might pivot. But if you take a look at what the Fed is forecasting, the unemployment rate to be about a half point within this range for the next 3 years, we think it's very unlikely. We think that the U.S. is headed closer to 2 million job losses net over the course of next year. And that's, again, if the Federal Reserve will ultimately not continue to tighten through those job losses. But we wouldn't expect them this year, right? The lags between where the economy, again, started to absorb these rate hikes and where it is right now, it's not going to be immediate. We would expect non-farm payrolls to grow through the rest of the year. And just one really simple example. If you think about what's happened to the monthly pace of new home sales, it's down 51%. But home completion, spending, construction spending, or even employment in residential construction, it's down 2% in this new cycle high for employment. That's because we were building houses and starting these projects a year ago at a lower interest rate level and a higher sales pace. So these are the types of things that have to work through the economy. But forward-looking financial markets should be focused on next year.
Stephen, where are we heading in terms of the new normal? Are we heading toward a rebound, the likes of which we haven't seen in 2009 at some point, if the Fed does shift gears or if there is some sort of washout event? Or are we heading toward a lost decade of profits where you get basically leadership meandering from one area to another and not from big tech?
What I would imagine is that we can have a cyclical recovery in 2024. Right. Unfortunately, we've simply run a pro-cyclical monetary policy with the help of fiscal policymakers turning COVID into a boom, right? Not having targeted, limited stimulus, giving a boom and then taking it away and driving a bust. These are not the things that sort of drive economic growth for a 10-year period of time. Again, it's some really rough elbows here from policy. But it's not going to, again, stop innovation. It's not going to stop any of the things that drive economic growth in the long run. Just take a look at 2002. That was a period in which the NASDAQ fell 78%. But some of the key innovations that drove growth over the coming 20 years were literally invented at that time. Apple's iPod, iOS, these are just examples of things right. that moved the trillion-dollar economic gains for years and years to come.
And I'm sure that Tom will pick up on this, and he's been talking a lot about this adapting, the adjusting, the innovation. On the flip side, there's also the social aspect overlaid on top of this, especially as inflation starts to bite into the lower and middle income Americans and globally. And we're seeing that in elections. We're seeing that in a lot of the strikes and the uprisings. How do you price in political risk at a time when it's really coming to the forefront?
Well, it's not terribly easy. And usually these types of political risks and 9 out of 10 cases in the last 80 years have not been turning points for the world economy. They matter a lot in terms of driving local, regional crises, but they don't really turn around the world economy. Now, unfortunately, there is a lot of bad news to absorb here. And markets could have seen more of this coming, perhaps. They may overreact to this. But ultimately, curing inflation at what we expect will end up being, unfortunately, a good deal of cyclical economic pain, right? It's going to come at the expense of the labor market. But we're not going to have long-term inflation instability, right? That's what I think one of the messages that we're going to see. So we're going to end up interest rates peaking at a relatively low level. Unfortunately, we had to go through a boom and bust cycle. But whether you can feed that back to a particular political outcome that's going to change the economy, all we can do, again, is have some safe assets in our portfolios in that
right.
event.
But then looking at the Citigroup platform, and you guys have been phenomenal with Hollenhorst on the Fed call and all that. Stephen Whiting, when does the United States not ignore what's going on internationally? When is the point where it becomes like what you and I studied in the 90s, where, I'm sorry, international matters?
It could take some time. Unfortunately, the Federal Reserve is focused very much on lagging economic indicators. In fact, domestic services prices, poor services, again, have got a power to them. They are a component of the index of lagging economic indicators. And if you just focused on, 2%, we need that 2%, we could be deep into a recession before we see 2% on these measures again. So these effects from around the world, we think, will compound against some of the downward pressure on the economy, downward pressure on prices. We don't expect every CPI reading to look like August on the core going forward. But it's going to be a while before you really see that in the economy. So patience, something that central banks told us to have for a while, they've run out of it. And it would be a good time for us to realize that again. The one thing that we heard out of Chairman Powell, I think was really it was a minor point at Jackson Hole, was that it's going to take some time to get inflation lower. And if they try to achieve it very, very quickly, we're going to end up with a much more cyclical trade-off, more than is necessary.
And we're going to feel some pain along the way as well. Stephen Whiting, thank you. Citi Global Wealth Investments.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.